With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me, as always, is Josh Hart to take Twitter questions. And what would you say the level of angst is right now, Josh? If we're describing it like a punk rock or like, you know, one of those bands, where are we at the moment? Are we like a Death Cab for Cutie? Are we like
we're like brand new, maybe like a Taking Back Sunday. We might even be at like a Treyu levels of angst.
I don't even see it. This is the thing. I never got to this level of emotion, like as a child. I think I veered clear of this. But.
Yeah, it's just bad. It's just pretty bad. This is what it feels like when you get home after a long day and all you have in the fridge is a zucchini and a can of tuna.
Shout out zucchinis, man. Very versatile vegetable. Like that's on the to buy list every week for groceries.
Facts.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying something, some real basketball analysis, and I interrupted you.
Oh, no. Listen, the Raptors are 5 games under 500. They've lost 7 of their last 8 games. They are some good news. Some players are clear to practice. So, everyone except for OG is now clear to practice, which is nice. But what condition they'll be in to play games and whether they can start winning games is the major question. And mostly people are just really, really down and looking to tear down the team because it's clearly not a great team at the moment. And Josh, honestly, before we even get to questions, I want to think about three things. Like, honestly, I had questions essentially that I wanted to go over with you. So let's start with this one, which I think is most tangible. Is really, how much do the Raptors have to win to be competitive this year? Which means probably get into the playoffs, get a 6 seed, right? Get maybe even a top 4 seed. Of course, that seems very unrealistic at the moment. But, you know, right now, the 4th seed in the East is the Heat at +3. So let's assume at the end of the season, they're +6 in terms of 6 games over 500. Okay. The Raptors right now are 4 games back. Obviously, they're 5 games under 500. There's 6 teams in between. Pretty much to go between 17 and 22 now to get to 6 games above 500 at the season's end, which is 39 and 33. The Raptors would need to go 22 and 10 for the second half of the season.
How many times do they play the Lakers upcoming? How many more games against the Nets? Utah? Two. Damn, even the Knicks, they looked kind of good yesterday. In the fourth quarter, they like came back. You think the Raptors can pull off a fourth quarter comeback?
Against who?
Against the Nets.
Against the
without
Nets,
KD,
no.
Without KD as a caveat. But the Nuggets, they still have to play a couple times. Like
2, yep.
Clippers? 2? Have they played the Clippers 2? Yet?
Nope. So there's your 10 losses right there. We got to beat everybody else.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Do I have to play the Hawks again? Because that's a loss.
Come on, man.
They have to play
Brooklyn. We're beating the Hawks the next time we see them, okay? The Hawks got us twice in lucky circumstances. We're going to get them. Watch. We're going to get them, okay? Tony Snell, we're coming for you, man. I can't believe that's what we're saying there. To finish 4 games above 500, Raptors got to go 21 and 12. To finish 2 games above 500, right, at 37 and 35, the Raptors need to go 20 and 13. And just to finish at 500, the Raptors will need to be 19 and 14 over this last stretch, which is tough when we're just talking about 500. And 500 probably gets you, maybe clears you of the play-in tournament, but probably not. Because, you know, the play-in tournament at the moment, the Raptors would be outside of it. Oh, my God. Oh, no. But yeah, I mean, like the 7th and the 8th seed get to play in the play-in tournament. The 7th seed is the Knicks right now, 20 and 20. The Hawks are 19 and 20. They're the 8th seed. It's tough. And these last couple of losses are doubly painful because these are the kind of games the Raptors needed to make up. So
these are kind of the last trash teams they play before. I don't know, I'm sure they see the Wizards again at the end of the season, but
I mean, Wizards playing better now.
Yeah, Wizards aren't playing terribly. So wait, so did you say 21-14?
To 21-12 just to finish four games above 500, just to finish 38-34, 22-10 to finish 39-33, which is probably where you would need to be reasonably to have a reasonable chance in the first round.
That's not gonna happen.
Yeah, that's a tough one. All right,
that's a tough one. I mean, laid out like that, it does seem like there's not really much cause to be too excited about what happens next.
But okay, what was
your next question?
Okay, so yeah, I mean, there wasn't really an answer to that other than that's tough. The next question is really like, okay, so if you think about timelines in terms of the Raptors and how they're building this season, right? Or not even just this season, but just as a team. You have sort of the old core, which I would say is Kyle. He's probably the last piece left from the old core, right? You know, most of the other guys have left.
Yeah.
Then there's the current core, which I would say is Fred, OG, Pascal. Norm is a question mark because he's not signed yet. But and also, I'm not really sure if he's a core piece. But, you know, let's put Norm in that group. Okay, so that's the current core. And then you have what is the future core. And I think the future core is the one that's the most in question. Because ideally what you do is if you're going to try to reshuffle your roster, you can either trade Kyle for immediate help to help the current core.
Yeah.
Or you trade Kyle to help the future core, to build the future core. And right now, I don't know what's in the future core other than Malachi Flynn. Is there another piece that you're like, I'm sure that this guy's going to be here? And to be honest, we haven't actually seen that much from Malachi so far this year as a rookie. Now, of course, that's due to circumstances beyond him. But at the same time, it's not like he's a guaranteed lock to be a future starter, for example, right? So
for sure.
You're
not putting Chris in that sort of future looking group. I get it. He's kind of a supporting piece to the current core.
I mean, he might be right there with Norm as like a question mark for the current core.
I
would say he's part of the next core, right? Because before it was like TD might be in there.
Yeah, he's fallen out. Thomas has fallen out.
You know. Like Jalen Harris is the 59th pick, which we like him, but like the last 59th pick the Raptors had, you know, DeJuan Hernandez, he was out after a year.
Yeah. This is depressing, dog. Yeah, I mean, there isn't a future. There is not a set of prospects that the Raptors organization can say these guys are all going to be there in a couple years besides Flynn. And Flynn has had a weird rookie season for all of the reasons that, you know, every season, everything this year has been horrible.
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess the question is really, do you use the old core in Lowry? First off, is Lowry able to fit in with the timeline of the current core? And if you don't feel that that's the best use, then can you use Kyle to flip into pieces for this next core, like this current core or the next core? I think that's the real question.
Well, okay, preseason, before Giannis re-signed, before Paul George re-signed, before Victor Oladipo fell off the cliff, the fantasy was in the offseason of 2021, the Raptors would bring in a, you know, top 2015 level guy to support the current core, including Kyle Lowry, maybe at a reduced salary, to contend. I think the Kyle question has much more to do with the prospects for this upcoming offseason and the idea of bringing in a guy who could help this team contend, and less to do with what Kyle has in the tank left in his contract value. Because if all things were star-crossed, he would be coming back, no doubt in my mind. If the team really still had a shot at Giannis, Kyle Lowry would be back in a Raptors jersey. The dollars be damned. It just wouldn't matter. So I think the question, like, is Kyle Lowry's fit with his current core is a little unfair because I don't know if who if there was a free agent that would extend the sort of old and current core into contention in the next 2 or 3 years, definitely Kyle is a part, or 2 years tops, Kyle's definitely a part of that core. But unless you can, you believe that this, that team is out there, Kyle no longer really fits. Because now you're putting OG, Fred, Pascal on a 4 to 5 year timeline of being a contender again. And maybe that's true, but they're definitely not a contender in 2 years without a free agent signing. Is that a, that's the answer. So Kyle is a piece of this current core if the timeline is before 2024, but is not one after that, and isn't one if the timeline for this current core is longer than two seasons.
And listen, honestly, the timeline of this current core might not be longer than two seasons, because that's largely the extent where the contracts end, right? Like Pascal's in year one of a 5-year deal. Fred's in the year one of a 4-year deal. OG's in the first, he hasn't even entered his deal yet. But in any case, like, you know, a lot of these guys could be moved before things come up. But, I think that question is something the front office has to ask themselves. Like, you know, is Kyle part of this current core? Is Kyle part of the next core?
And what is the timeline that we're operating on? Like,
To be clear, like, it's not like trading Kyle is the only avenue to building the next core, because the Raptors do have their first round pick.
Yep.
That could be a piece along with Flint that you kind of keep developing.
Looks like it's going to be.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And then really my third question was really just like, how good is that current core, which is Fred, OG, Pascal? Let's put in Norm. How many wins is that in a healthy regular season without COVID, you know, in Toronto?
It's like a 500 team.
It's only 500? If it's only 500, then we got real problems.
It's a few games above 500, but it's not below 500. Mm. But it's not, like, I don't know. What do people really want? Like, the expectation that I have for this team now and for as far out as I can imagine, is that they are interesting to watch, you know, at home or at Scotiabank when the world reopens. And I believe that the core that currently exists is interesting enough to go out there and compete with the best team, not the best teams, but with the, like, good teams night after night, and definitely beat the bad teams with the sort of institutional intensity that they've played with over the last few years. So maybe 500 is a bit weak, but, like, I don't know. Do I think that next year they could be a 50-win team in a regular season? Yeah. And is a 50-win team worth my attention? Yeah. So maybe they're in that, like, 44 to 47, maybe push to 50-win team. So, yeah, that's where I would put them. Do you...
I honestly feel like that could still be the core of a 50-win team if you have those four guys.
If you have those,
provided that you give them like Raptors, a somewhat decent bench, like not this year's bench, right? Like a somewhat decent bench.
Yes.
I think that team can be 500. That team could be a 50-win team. I mean, I do think that there is some track record of this, right? Like the fact that without Kyle the last few years, they're like what, 16-1, right? And it does remind me of the without Kawhi in that championship year, because he was load managing for 20 of them. The Raptors were like, I don't know, 17-3 or something like that. And it did translate a little bit over. And of course, they're not going to win at that rate, but like 50 wins with that core. If Pascal, Fred, and OG and Norm are healthy for a year, I can see 50 for that. I really can, especially if you give them a center, whether that's starting with that group or Boucher plus a backup center that's better than Aron Baynes. So, I mean, if that's the young core, then, you know, that is interesting. I mean, if that's the case, you know, if there are 50-win core, if you believe that, then I think you probably need to use Kyle to bring in a piece that fits that timeline. And if you don't believe that that's a 50-win core, if you believe that's a 500 core, then you probably use Kyle to bring in the next generation to supplement Flynn or the first-round pick plus whatever. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of if you're set on trading Kyle, that should be your decision matrix. And those are the questions you should be asking.
Yeah, I do think I want to push back on the idea of them being a 50-win team in the Atlantic Division when they have to play the, like, however long this Nets team stays together, however long the Celtics have like two of the best wings in the conference, the league probably. It'll be kind of tough for them to pick up those easy wins. Yeah, they can challenge to be a 50-win team this core. I don't think that they are they will not be until there is that dude on this team, one that you pencil into the top half of the conference. But they're a playoff team. And that's...
But I mean, maybe we're just biased by this, or maybe I'm just biased by this, but like the last few years, right? I mean, the last like half decade or whatever, like outside of Kawhi, like was there like a top 10 guy on the team? Like Kyle maybe had a top 10 level impact, but I wouldn't say Kyle was like a top 10 player necessarily. Sure. Maybe in 2016. 2016 was legitimately ridiculous. DeMar was, I would say, a cut below that as well.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is like, you know, D'Angelo Russell is no longer in Brooklyn. Like they have... Real dude, like,
I mean, but come on, no disrespect, the East still has plenty of ass teams, right? Like, yes, you're right. The top of the East is more
talented. I'm saying the Atlantic Division, the teams that we have to play a lot are good,
but we only play them like one more extra game than like the rest of the East, for example.
Sure, and I think that that's why getting to 50 as a milestone will be challenging.
That's true. I mean, the Knicks are solid now. There's no easy win in the Atlantic.
There are no easy wins on a Friday afternoon where they're playing this, you know, Jrue Holiday Sixers. Like that team's gone. That team was food, and it's gone.
Yeah, you're right, you're right. No, I can see that. I just don't... The rest of the East, though, has compensated, has balanced out. Like, the Southeast Division is, like, a gong show outside of...
Yeah, but then they always Miami. Lose They always lose those games. They go down there at the beginning of November in a regular season, and somehow they lose to, like, they lose both of the Orlando... They lose the Miami and then the Wizards back-to-back before they come home to play on Friday against the Phoenix Suns, where they'll do something great. But that game, those two games where they play Miami, then back to back to play the Wizards on like Tuesday, and then they have 3 days off to play some Western Conference team at home. It happens every year. They'll win the Friday game and they'll lose the Monday and Tuesday game, or the Sunday and Monday game. I'm not going to go back and find examples of it, but it happens every year. They lose these stupid Southeast games to crappy, like...
I mean, I always feel like we lose one more game to the Heat every year than we need to, and like one more game to the Magic every year.
Shout out to Wayne Ellington. He really made him pay.
Bro, I don't want to talk about that, man. Honestly, bring him to the Raptors already. He'd be our best bench player.
Seriously.
Outside of Boucher. Anyway, so those are the questions I pretty much was asking myself, and... I kind of wanted to touch that up top. Of course, we got plenty of questions from listeners, as always, so I appreciate it. We can't get to all of them, but we're going to try to get through as many as possible. Let's start with this one from Suzanne. Thoughts on how we might right the ship by adding a piece without leaving a big hole before the deadline to salvage the 2020-2021 season? I wanted to start with something positive because I think most of those trades ideas are kind of sell trades to make the Raptors worse or anything like that. But is there a possibility to retool the roster without, like, let's say without giving up a first round pick? Because I think if the Raptors put the first round pick into play, they can probably get a good piece. But I don't want them to do that, and I don't think under any circumstances they should do that.
What's that, like, Norm Powell Bol Bol type trade? And it's
Bol Bol. Gonna help.
I know, but what's the other guy that they put in that trade? I can't remember his name.
They always throw like Gary Harris into these trades. I don't want Gary Harris. He's much worse than Norm.
Yeah, he's a lot worse. I don't know. The whole team outside of the five guys and 70% of Chris Boucher, like, has been a kind of a brick. Like, it's like last year we had a segment for a guy who we thought would never play, and this year he's an essential part of the rotation in Stanley Johnson.
He started the last few games.
Like, it's kind of that's kind of like evidence of just how unfixable this team is. Like, you can't play Paul Watson, like, for 20 minutes on Sunday like you did the other day. And no disrespect to Paul Watson, but, like, that's a weird place for this team to be in. I don't believe that there's a one-guy fix for the things with this team that are bad. Like, At the high end of this team, they're able to shut down the Bucks. On the low end of the team, it's like a total disaster. And when they beat the Bucks, if they make a change to their sustainability of the team by starting Pascal at the five, it's just they're the only good answers for this team is like they're like a glass cannon. It's like, you know, when Blastoise uses hydro pump, he can't make a move the next turn.
Wait, no, that's Skull Bash.
That's Skull Bash. You're right. Yeah. And when I said hydro pump, like that's not right. But yeah, it's like this team can Skull Bash. Mm-hmm. But they don't. But then they like they can get to 500, and then they go on a 5-game losing streak.
No, I think that's like actually a really great point, because I think when you do watch the Raptors, you kind of can tell like they play hard half the time. Like you, yeah. even if the last few losses, right? They play like ass against Detroit. Just no excuse for that. But then they play their hearts out and lose to the Celtics, and whatever, you're gonna lose to the Celtics, but whatever. Right. And then they play like ass against Charlotte. But then before that, they play their hearts out against the Hawks, you know, and it's sort of been that sort of inconsistent kind of spurt, which honestly, that comes down to like the mentality and the winning mentality. I think part of winning mentality is just like being able to summon that mental focus to play hard and execute game after game. Because that's what we saw from the Raptors for like, you know, 5-6 seasons was just like guys are able to come out every game and do something, find a way to win. Some guys might not necessarily shoot well. Some guys might not necessarily do this, but they'll defend well. Yeah. They're going to execute. And generally speaking, you know, in close games, they had enough star talent to sort of finish that out. And when you do all that, you're probably going to be at 50 wins. But this year, they just haven't been consistent on a nightly basis. Their defense is bad half the time. And it comes down a lot to effort, really, because we've seen the same guys do much better.
Yeah.
One possible trade that may be a win now trade is this report from Chris Haynes, which this question comes from Vector Victor, who says, if a center like Tristan Thompson is available, should the Raptors trade for them or just pack it in for the year? So Chris Haynes says the Raptors are interested in Tristan Thompson. Josh, how many times have the Raptors been linked to Tristan Thompson, bro?
More times
the Raptors have been linked to Tristan. I was going to say.
No, I'm sorry. I stole your joke.
No. That's exactly where I was going with that, man. Like, what's going on? Are the Raptors Chloe? Like, what is this?
Yeah, shout out Tristan Thompson. I don't care for Canadians being on this team. I think it's cool that they're successful wherever they go. Hmm. I'm kind of bummed that it didn't work out for him in Boston. Maybe he's truly a GTA man's because he sewered the Celtics.
Right.
What would the Raptors be sending back, according to Mr. Haynes?
Well, okay, listen, he didn't say anything about that. But let's say Aaron Baines and a future second round pick. You know how much the Celtics love Aaron Baines. It'd be reunited. To be honest, Aaron Baines feels like a Celtic to me. And I feel like he should be a Celtic this year. If I would do that trade 100% right now. Like, not this year's second round pick, maybe a future second round pick, but if the Celtics somehow say yes to that, I'm down. Because honestly, Tristan has a guaranteed year next season for about $9 million, and Baines has a team option for next year. So the Raptors might even just be able to pull that trade off just to get the Celtics to offer them basically salary flexibility.
So this is basically the Jared Sellinger for PJ Tucker trade from a few years ago.
Kind of, yeah, in a way. Although, honestly, I might prefer Jared Sellinger.
to Aaron Baines. Well, Jared Sellinger...
He had good vibes.
He did have way better vibes than Aaron Baines. Speaking of Aaron Baines, I think since we last recorded this, he's finally stopped wearing the Kobe Sixes that he was in like every game. And it drove me crazy because there's such a highly visible shoe for a guy who, when he's out there, it's, you know, not making me very happy. But the Jared Sellinger trade, I think that Tristan Thompson is presently a more valuable player than PJ Tucker was in, I don't know, I think I actually preferred PJ Tucker.
No, PJ was better.
I preferred PJ Tucker in 2017 to Tristan Thompson in 2021. But I also prefer Jared Sellinger to Aaron Baines. And a second-round pick will be roughly... Well, actually, it was a better second-round pick because the Raptors were, like, a number one seed. But I think it's, like, an equivalent trade. And if the team made that one then, and I thought it was a good move, probably agree with that trade.
See, okay, I don't actually hate that trade. Not necessarily because I really love Tristan Thompson. I don't think Tristan Thompson is going to change the change the bottom line for this team, right? I think they need to get healthy and they need their main guys to play well.
Yeah.
But then again, I this comes back to the first question I asked, is basically how good do the Raptors have to play to win? Because they have to be, as I mentioned, just to get to 500, 19-14. That's doable with this roster. They would need to go on like a 5-game win streak at some point, but that's doable just without any upgrades. To get to like a 22-10, which is just to finish 39-33, so you're like the 60, you avoid the play-in tournament or whatever. Is Tristan Thompson going to make that much of a difference? And maybe he will, but most likely he won't. So, but in any case, would I make that trade if it was Baynes in a second for Tristan? Yes, I would. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Tristan rebounds. I think he makes layups at a similar rate, if not slightly higher. And defensively, I don't really know. I mean, maybe a little worse, to be honest.
Was Sullinger signed for the MLE when he came to Toronto?
No, he was like $5 million. I don't know. It was cheaper than that, I think. But I mean, it wasn't really his fault. He got hurt. To be honest, the last time we got a Celtics big, you're right, actually. The last time we got a Celtics big, it didn't really work out for us.
Fact.
Yeah. Next question comes from Renee, who asks, as the trade deadline approaches, is anyone on this team truly untouchable? He says Fred and OG are his only ones.
Whoa, disrespect to Pascal Siakam.
I mean,
who are you trading Pascal for?
Yeah, I don't think it's untouchable. Like, if there was like a, like, would you trade, if the Pelicans called and they're like, hey, we'll give you Brandon Ingram for Pascal Siakam, are you at least entertaining that call, or are you just immediately turning off the phone?
I mean, no disrespect to Brandon Ingram having a hell of a season, or especially early. No, thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, then, okay, fine. Pascal's untouchable for you.
You would think about that trade?
I would entertain it. I do think that there's an element that you could get from Ingram, which is that sort of like late game shot creation kind of thing.
Yeah, there's, okay. So there's,
which, but okay, as a team operator, like, I do think Pascal is better defensively than Ingram is. That's not a question to me. I think Ingram is a little bit more skilled, but Pascal is able to get to the rim a little bit better.
Yeah.
I don't know. That one, I really have to think about it. Like, you would really have to, like, pull up all the synergy stats and look it up. What?
Doesn't an Ingram and Fred team seem weird?
Yeah, just two guys settling for
for deep threes for no reason.
Would be a little bit annoying. But let's be real. I mean, it's not like Pascal's shot selection this year has been, like, consistently fantastic either.
Yeah, so. Fair enough. I don't know.
I don't think there is an untouchable on the team. Like, and that's not to say the team is ass. I just mean, like, untouchable to me is, like, you have LeBron. And you're the Cavs.
There's no way. There are no assets that are of equivalent enough value.
Yeah, like Zion on the Pelicans.
Yeah,
or like Luka on the Mavs. Like, the Raptors don't have anything close to that level.
No.
I would not look to trade Fred under pretty much any circumstances. But, you know.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, it'd probably be Fred and Pascal for me. But Pascal, I'm willing to entertain offers for like a Brandon Ingram type. Or that young player on a long-term contract on equivalent money. Next question from Jeff Lowe. What could you realistically get for Norm? So Zach Lowe said on his podcast today that he can't count on two hands how many teams have inquired for Norm. So that's at least 10.
At least 11.
anyway. At least a third of the NBA has inquired for Norman Powell. Are you surprised by this?
No, he's like on a great value deal. Well, not Walmart brand, but great value. I'm happy for him. Like, it's, I feel like a lot of people, especially in Toronto, think of Norm as being, I mean, I think a less valuable player than I place him. So I'm glad that he's getting this. The front offices around the league are sort of validating what he brings to the table. Yeah, he's a player who's not going to accept his $12 million option next season and is able to fill up the stat sheet with secondary scoring. It makes sense. I'm happy for him. I don't know. What I imagine the teams that are interested in him are the top third of the league. I don't think there are any bad teams who want Norm, because Norm is not a very useful player to a good team or to a bad team.
Sure. Yeah, I agree.
So I'm not surprised. And who will give, like, what deals are out there with good teams that aren't going to be, like, if the interest is to sell high on Norm, mm-hmm. trading him to a very good team that's looking to go contend is impossible. Because
would you take a late first round pick? The Heat are a bad example, but let's say the Heat offer you Kelly Olynyk and they can't offer a pick, so forget the Heat. Let's say that the Sixers offer you Danny Green and a future first.
The Sixers, maybe. I think the teams that I'd be more interested in trading him to are teams that things could maybe go sideways for. Like if the Nuggets have a first round pick next season and are willing to deal it in the hopes that that would help them climb the standings quickly as they need to, but I think that there's a decent chance that they won't, and then that pick is early 20s. I'm very interested in something like that, and I know that like the first round placement isn't the most important thing, but I'm not looking to trade him to the Clippers for the 28th pick. Like, that just kind of seems. Right.
I mean,
also, Norm does not have a replacement on this team next season.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like hard to, because you're just handcuffing yourself for the future, like really. And for a guy who, you know, like late first round pick and stuff like that, it doesn't fully feel like enough. If you're comfortable with re-signing Norm Powell $18 million a year, you're basically saying that you would pay an extra $18 million. Not even that, actually. You're basically saying you're willing to sacrifice all the production from Norm just for a future first-round pick that is probably going to be, at best, Norman Powell. That doesn't fully make sense to me. And I would need, like, a prospect and that. If you said two picks, then maybe I'm interested. But I don't know, because I think it makes sense for the Raptors to re-sign Norm this offseason. I think he would fit well with the current core, as I mentioned, Fred, OG, Pascal. With Norm makes a lot more sense than just those three alone.
But do you think that,
because you would need to spend that money to replace Norm in the first place? Because that first round pick's not getting you a Norm Powell immediately. Maybe they will get you that in like 5 years, but not right now.
Do you think Bobby Webster is thinking right now that he can turn the Terrence Davis situation around? Maybe not for the beginning of next season, but eventually, and maybe you find a stopgap solution elsewhere this offseason to replace Norm's production in tandem with a guy like Terrence Davis. I don't know. Like that doesn't seem like a very good option. And I think last time we did this, I said Terrence Davis put $10 million, like put money in Norm's pocket because he's been a disaster this season. He is completely taken himself out of the conversation of being the heir to the backup shooting guard position on this team. Or it may be like, if the idea next year is that Norm might start,
if you re-sign Norm, Norm's going to start.
Yeah. So if Norm's starting next year, there is no one in the Raptors organization that can replace his production right now. And you're going to have to sign someone who can replace that production for Norm money. So sorry, Norm haters, but your real enemy is Terrence Davis, which is a pretty good enemy to have.
Yeah, fair enough. Next question from Just Nels. What will the next 5 years look like for Toronto after Lowry leaves? Will we hit a rebuild and trade current assets for picks or settle for playoff appearances? So basically, is it going to be a full-scale teardown where you're trying to get rid of everybody, like an OKC-style situation, or do the Raptors move on from Kyle, but try to keep the current core going and keep winning and building from the middle? I think, to me, the Raptors have shown consistently that they will build from the middle.
Yeah.
And that's it's different than being it's stuck in the middle. Stuck in the middle is you have contracts, you can't move, but they're too good to like not allow you to be terrible. And then you're just maybe stuck in the middle. I think the Raptors have shown they can draft well from all positions. And I know I just said I don't want Norm for a late first round pick. I just think that he deserves more than a late first round pick. If you gave me two first round picks, then maybe I'm talking, but not one. But I think the Raptors as an organization have drafted so well that I don't mind them drafting from like a mid-teen kind of position. And then on top of that, I do think that the Raptors as an organization, I don't think they have a philosophy necessarily of tanking. I think they really care about winning. All they talk about is winning. And maybe you pay that as lip service, but I really do think there is something that they cherish about the fact that they have guys who know how to win, who expect to win. That's a culture where you come to that team, you're expected to win. You might not necessarily win like this year, but even this year, all they talk about is winning. So I do think that they will probably build from the middle. So my answer to that is no. I think the Raptors will, if Lowry leaves, the Raptors will try to keep supplementing, you know, surrounding pieces in this current core around Fred, around OG, around Pascal, around Norm, and trying to go for it while also you know, supplementing the roster and building more talent on the second unit. Pretty much basically that 2018 season where the Raptors had entrenched starters in, you know, Kyle, DeMar, JV, Serge, and then, and I guess OG, but then they had young guys on the bench, which were, you know, Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, DeLon Wright, which, by the way, holy crap, that was really our bench,
fun,
man.
What a fun team.
Now our bench is not anything like that. But I think that's what they're trying to go for, the 2018 model.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the team tears it down. I think you really just need to figure out a way to, you know, like the team it's not a destination market who traded away all of their prospects to win a title. Totally worth it.
Yeah.
Now they have to bring in as many assets and draft capital as they can in the near term so that they can rebuild. So, like, if the Raptors were to make a trade that would be kind of sad but make some sense, is if they traded Norm Powell to the Pelicans for J.J. Redick in one of their firsts. Like, it'd be shitty because J.J. Redick's like 37 years old. But yeah, they have all of these first. Like, if you got one of their firsts and then a swap.
Give me two. Or, like, Nikhil Alexander-Walker.
See, that's a trade I like.
That's probably asking for too much, but, you know, something like that.
Wait, because so J.J. Redick is an unrestricted free agent. So he wants to go somewhere that he can play. I don't know.
It probably have to be a three-way deal. I don't think J.J. ends up in Toronto. I think he ends up in New York or Brooklyn.
But if you're able to, like, send Norm, I think, the J.J. Redick experience has sucked. Like, he's kind of let that team down. Not that he's the most important guy, but it's not worked out. Norm Powell makes sense there. If he goes to New Orleans and we're able to get back some of their upcoming draft capital or one of their prospects in a guy like Nikhil Alexander-Walker, that's, like, one of the more compelling trade narratives that's out there.
I mean, I wouldn't hate that. If, let's say, they use JJ to get a first-round pick, but that first-round pick was relayed to Toronto, and then Norm went to New Orleans, and we got Nikhil Alexander-Walker in that trade, then I'm like, okay, that's interesting to me. But again, it can't just be a late first-round pick, right? You can't just, like, swap directly with the team and get their late first-round pick. So, because I just think Norm's worth more than that, man. If you're willing to pay the man $18 million a year for the next three years, that should be worth more. That's worth more than the late first round pick. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It just is. Like, talent wise, it's not a good play. All right. Next question from Red Fan Fleets. Is there a style of team building that will 100% lead to a championship?
I don't know. Do you have an answer?
The style is you have like a generational talent that, and even that won't necessarily lead to a championship because I don't think anything necessarily 100% leads to a championship. But at minimum, you need a top five player at worst. And honestly, five might be too generous. could be less than five. The nature of basketball is such that one guy is so important to the team. The rest of the team is important around him. The circumstances are important. Coaching is important. Supporting players are important. The style of the play is important. Defense obviously can't be played with one person. But one person can affect so much in basketball that, like, you need that guy. Absolutely. Like, the Raptors don't do anything without Kawhi Leonard. And, of course, all the other guys mattered. But that's, like, the main piece that you have. Like, you can't have, like, if you think about a team as, like, Thanksgiving dinner, like, Kawhi is, like, the fucking turkey in the middle, okay? And, you know,
Fred VanVleet's the cranberry sauce.
Yo, come on, man. Fred was like a gravy. Was it essential? Not necessarily, but he did. I mean, to be honest, actually, gravy is essential. You can't just have turkey. If you have no gravy, I don't think I'll have a Thanksgiving dinner.
So what was Fred VanVleet Jr.?
See, this is the thing. I already did a Lord of the Rings. I did a Fellowship of the Ring / 2019 championship assigning where I had like Aragorn as Kawhi and like Serge as Gimli and stuff like that. This is good. So the 2019 Raptors as a Thanksgiving spread. So Kawhi's the turkey. What's the second most important piece?
In my family, it's like mac and cheese.
Okay. So Kyle's a mac and cheese.
Yeah, I agree.
Like a thick.
Thick, like it works perfectly.
Yeah, just the base carb. Like, yeah. You're right. Okay, so Kyle's a mac and cheese. What else is important? So is stuffing important to you? Are you pro-stuffing or are you anti-stuffing?
I'm not anti-stuffing, but I did not grow up. It was, you know when you spend like a Thanksgiving Saturday with your friend's family and they – you know, or of different ethnicity than you. That's mm-hmm. when I first experienced stuffing. That's
okay,
all right.
Okay, word.
It's not. I don't hate it.
Okay, you know what? I got what stuffing is. So stuffing comes with the turkey, which means stuffing is Danny Green in this case. He's part of the turkey. So okay, all right. So it's Danny Green is stuffing.
Yeah.
Kyle is mac and cheese. Like Pascal is like the other meat dish that's there. Like a chicken.
Yeah.
Because you're not only having the turkey. You're probably having something else, right? Like a roast chicken or something like that.
Or if you have ham or like roast beef.
Oh, like a ham. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's like you expect it to be there. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, you're like, yo, what's going on?
Right.
But, you know, it is not it's a thing that gets brought to the Thanksgiving. It's not made in the house that Thanksgiving dinner is served in.
Right. Jeremy Lin might be like the fruitcake that gets left uneaten. I'm sorry, Jeremy, man. You know I love you. You know I love you, but
Mark is mashed potatoes.
Yep, I agree. Absolutely.
And Serge is gravy. Well, wait, but we said Fred is gravy.
I think Fred is gravy in the sense that he was a necessary ingredient to make it all work. Like you need a little bit of gravy with pretty much most of those items to make it work. Not mac and cheese, but the rest of them, yes. This is where you run into issues because it's not perfect. And also, I had a very immigrant, Thanksgiving. So I have no idea. I mean, what my parents served is not anything close to what is traditionally served. What's okay?
I'm trying to think, who is the rice and peas and oxo gravy? Because that's what I grew up. That was on every Thanksgiving plate I've ever had. And you know, Delon Wright was like string beans and. CJ Miles was
kind of shaped like string beans. So I looked like, oh, pumpkin pie. We need a pumpkin pie. That's the last one. Let's end on pumpkin
pie. That was Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse is the pumpkin pie?
And the whipped cream was the box in one.
Okay. There you go. So there's the 2019 Raptors as a Thanksgiving spread. This is going to be the best part of the podcast.
All right. In the middle of
I forgot what the question was. Yeah, exactly. Next question from Ronald Lowe. No matter what happens, this year's team will be thought of as a flawed team with a good core. What can be done to change that next year? I think you got to give them a center. They really need a center.
Indeed. I think I kind of want to push back on this being a flawed team. It's a team without a clear expectation of where it's going and a plan to execute. And I've kind of felt that way this whole season. Like, I remember Masai Ujiri gave an interview on Metro Morning where he talked about how the team's plan was to play in Scotiabank Arena. And this was something that this interview happened, I want to say, in like the first week of November. Mm. And from then on, it seems like the Raptors have constantly been in a state of like navigating their backup plans. Like things just haven't worked out at every level and at every turn. And that's not only the responsibility of the organization, but I do think that this addition of the Raptors is kind of a brick from Masai and Bobby. Like it's just, and parts of that were never in their control and it doesn't matter. They're playing in Tampa Bay, but I think thinking of this team as a flawed team is a little unfair because, you know, if we were to roll back the calendar 10 years, this would have been a perfectly acceptable trajectory for the 2011 Raptors. And that's kind of the fault of the organization not being clear about where this group of guys was going and how we are going to get there. Like the Alex Len signing, not playing him and cutting him. Like, it's just kind of like, what do you like? It's who's that? Who's steering this thing? Kind of problem. And I don't know. That's kind of what I would push back on this team being flawed. I think this team is just lacking purpose, direction. I said on Twitter yesterday, like, all we need is Socrates to give like a hype video where he explains what this team's all about. Because I don't know what this team's all about. It's like, there's no good story about what this team's doing this season, at least to me.
Yeah, I would say like this is definitely their thinnest roster they put together. It's a little top heavy. It's like one of those albums that has like three singles on it and the rest of it is just like, bro, what is this? Like you just like don't want to buy the album. You just want to buy the singles. Like this is like, this year's team is like a Magna Carta Holy Grail. Where there's like maybe three songs on there, you're like, okay, you can listen to that. Whereas like, I don't know, last year's team is like the Black Album, where there's quality no matter where you look, and even some of the not the singles are pretty decent to listen to.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does anyone listen to Jay-Z currently? This is a question I have to ask myself all the time. Yeah, I feel like I know a disproportionate amount of Jay-Z, but I don't see anybody quoting anything that he does.
Well, I mean, he doesn't like put out anything that you would put under an Instagram photo, but he had that song on the Judas and the Black Messiah soundtrack or music inspired by with him and Nipsey Hussle. That was pretty good.
Okay.
He just, but Jay-Z's never like, he hasn't consistently put out hit songs in over a decade.
That's true. It used to be Jay-Z featuring Beyonce. Now it's Beyonce featuring Jay-Z.
Facts.
Yeah. Shout out Beyonce though.
Shout out Beyonce.
Consistently good for like 20 years now. It's a really unreal run. Anyway, next question from Sandeep. Should Norm and Pascal exchange roles on offense? Norm has been a lot more efficient and his playmaking has improved recently. I don't know about exchange roles, just because obviously one guy's a big, one guy's a guard. Like, you can't just ask him to do different things. Like, I'm not putting Norm in the post five times a game and asking Pascal to, you know, pull up from three anymore. But maybe in terms of shot distribution, maybe, you know, I think before Pascal was like clear cut the number one option. And I think now he's sort of like, there are three number one options between Fred, Pascal, and Norm, while Kyle's the guy distributing.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the healthiest thing. I think Norm's gotten so good that he's deserving of one of those top three spots. What do you think?
Yeah, I still think I'm more committed to Pascal's development as a lead guy, that asking him to take a step back towards the pack on offense might not be part of a sound development strategy. Norm's kind of a finished product, and I'm not sure that he would – I'm not sure how much more you'd gain by giving him a change role in the offense when all things are equal. And I think that, like, making Pascal a more solid offensive option is, like, just – it's got to be, like, a priority for the organization.
Yeah. No, I agree with you with that. I mean, I think fundamentally, like, Pascal's a guy that creates shots a little bit more than Norm does. Norm is still a guy who finishes plays. So I think just on that alone, Pascal is still going to have more priority. But I don't want to see Norm's shots cut down is kind of my answer too. Like, I think there's more things that Norm is doing now that I want to see him doing even with a healthy squad. Like him pulling up for three nowadays, like him running a pick and roll, guards are going underneath him still. And when he pulls up, it's pretty good. I want to see that happen a little bit more often. I still wanted to see them look for him as much in transition as much as possible. Slashing and cutting to the basket. I don't think Norm's game is, I think it's really flexible because he's mostly finishing plays that he finds ways to get involved. I don't know necessarily. You need to like set up plays specifically to Norm as much as you need to for Pascal, but I think he's really climbed his way up there, man. Honestly, Norm's season has been one of the brightest parts of the year. Norm, it's like, and Pascal,
him, Chris, and maybe Fred has been. It's no, different. Fred's... Like it's not really a surprise. It's kind of what you expected when you gave him a big contract and that's said true. Like, this is your job now, and he's done his job. Norm Powell's just been like, it still kind of feels like found money.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I mean, to borrow an analogy, like, I feel like Norm is like this kid that you've had for, like, for me, like, I was like screwing around. I was like a 70 student for like grades 9 and 10, taking travel and tourism and food and nutrition as my, you know, electives. And then grade 11, I'm like, all right, I'm going to get serious. And I'm going to take school seriously. I'm going to really study. And I got myself to be a 90 student for grades 11 and 12. That I feel like that's Norm's jump. Whereas Fred is like consistently reliable, like a parent is. Like, you're not going to give your parent a great, you know, gift or a great birthday card just because, you know, they consistently make dinner. You just kind of expect that from them, you know? So it doesn't feel as great, but I don't know.
I get it.
Next question from Thomas. This podcast is weird. This is a weird episode. Why are the Raptors giving up so many open threes? Is it a roster issue or a defensive tactics issue?
Are they giving like a exceptional number of open threes? I mean
teams routinely hit 20 on us now. It hurts.
That is happening. I don't know. You're the basketball analyst. Why are they giving up so many threes?
I mean, I think the basketball reason is probably they just have such poor rim protection that they're overcompensating in the paint even more than before. I just also don't think that, like, last year, for example, like, every single player in the rotation was a strong defender. Mm-hmm. Like, the worst guy defensively last year in the rotation was Norm. And Norm's not even that bad defensively. He really isn't. Now... because of the injuries and because of the guys they have off the bench, stuff like that, like, they have, you know, Baines obviously is a defensive liability outside of post defense. Mm-hmm. Boucher is playing a lot more. He's not nearly as defensively sound as Serge was, or Mark. And then even the wing defenders, like, I just don't really trust them in the same way. I don't think they're rotating the same way. I think injuries have also hurt. Mm-hmm. So I think they're compensating for the pain a little bit more and they're giving up threes, but also. The teams are just shooting better on threes against us. That's one thing that's like, last year the Raptors allowed the worst or the best, I guess, opponent 3-point percentage at like 33%, which is great because maybe they're allowing the right shots, but also that element of luck goes into that. The Raptors, like, you know, it's tough. It's an open shot at the end of the day. Guys are going to hit it or not. But over the course of the season, the Raptors are fairly lucky. Now the Raptors are giving up 37.5% on threes. So that's a 4 percentage difference. And the Raptors are 23rd instead of first in the NBA. So guys are also hitting them more. But I also think that, like, part of it is scouting as well. I think teams are like pump faking the Raptors a lot more than I remember last year. I feel like last year the Raptors would fly by. But even if they did fly by, they would then contest from behind after the shooter relocated slightly. And I think they affected shots that way. I don't really feel like the same thing is happening this year. And I think teams are just kind of pump faking to get the Raptors completely out of position. Yeah. So I think they're getting scouted against better too. So I don't know, man. Also, how many times did we play Tony Snell last year? I felt like we didn't even see him last year. Now, you know, I'm sick of him. I'm good without seeing him the rest of his career, to be honest. Let's sign Tony Snell just so that he doesn't play against the Raptors.
Well, I didn't know that Masai Ujiri became Doc Rivers. Shout out Doc.
Shout out Doc, man. Good for him. I'm happy for Doc. We'll see what happens in the playoffs, but I'm happy for Doc.
Yeah. I really do want the Sixers to be competitive against the Nets. And really, I think it's just like a COVID race between those two teams. Whichever team can, like, health, I guess, taken more holistically. But I don't know.
Nets look nasty, though, man. They look so nasty. Like, the fact that Kyrie is averaging, like, 28 points per game, shooting, like, 50% from the field, 44% from three, 90% from the free throw line. Like, his efficiency this year is insane. Yeah. Like, obviously, Kyrie has always been, like, really good. But, like, now that he's, like, no more playmaking, like, you know, obviously, James hasn't been able to do that. More shooting around him than probably ever before. His efficiency this year is so good, man. His true shooting is 63%. And, you know, and we know Kyrie takes difficult shots, too. So, just a gifted artiste, man.
And he knows it. Also, great defensive player, apparently. Defensive stopper at the end of important games. I mean, was it a block? Was it? Did he have to let go?
It was a Fred VanVleet block. That's the Fred VanVleet block. A guy goes up to shoot, and you strip it on the way up.
Facts.
That's, it counts as a block. To be honest, though, that wasn't really a travel. Like, I feel like Randall had a reason to be pissed on that play, but whatever, man. It is what it is.
Did you like Kyrie waving him goodbye?
I
haven't seen that streak in Kyrie that much. Yeah, like you see it when he calls this press peons.
By the way, if people haven't seen it already, Desus and Merrill did a really good Kyrie Irving impersonation. You can find it on YouTube. It's really good. It's really good. And I like Kyrie, but yeah. What else? Next question, Masai's future. You know what? Let's wait another time to answer Masai's future. I mean, what can we really say? We have no idea. His future is make some phone calls, please. This one from Derek Andrews. Can we agree 5 years from now, when we look back on this season, it will be in the vein of, well, that was the COVID season and we were in Tampa all year, so it doesn't really count.
Yeah, it's fake season, fake basketball, fake ring. Yeah. The Raptors are the reigning and defending NBA champions.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. Yeah, of course it's fake.
And I think this is a year where the Raptors were hit by, you know, catastrophic circumstances, absolutely. Also, their talent wasn't that good.
Are you referring to Alex Len and Aaron Baines as catastrophic circumstances?
Jeez. I remember right after Mark and Serge left, I decided to just like tweet out random pictures of old Raptor centers. Yeah. So I was like Solomon Alibi, Reggie Evans, Tyler Hansbrough, Chuck Hayes. Like, and I was just like posting a string because there's like a huge number of these, like Primož Brezić, like there's just a Lauren Woods. Like it's just nonstop. Like you can go every single year by year, the Raptors had these guys, Alexis Ajinsa. And, like, the Raptors actually ended up with two guys that are going to fit squarely on that list, man.
What was the guy that the Raptors brought in, I want to say, like, 2016 or 17 playoffs? He played on Sacramento.
Jason Thompson.
Yeah.
You know what? What's Jason Thompson doing right now? Let's give him a massage. Give him a phone call, bro.
What is he doing right now?
I'll look it up. He's probably playing in, like, Germany or something.
Because he's not Thompson. Old.
Damn, Jason Thompson. When you start Jason Thompson, Canadian actor comes up first before Jason Thompson NBA does. That's tough. He is playing. Jason Carlton Thompson is an American professional basketball player for Shanghai Sharks of the Chinese Sick. Basketball Association. He was a starting center playing college basketball for... Okay, wow. Anyway, he's 34 years old. He's the same age as Aaron Baines. You down?
Not really, though.
All right, fair enough.
Did he even play in the playoff that year for the Raptors?
Very, very... No, I don't think so.
I remember very specifically learning that he wasn't the height he was listed at. That was like the
only... Oh, yeah, because they said he was 6'11", and he showed up, and you're like, bro, you're 6'7".
Yeah, that was the only thing I remember about that guy. No disrespect, but...
I mean...
That's crazy. That's your most salient memory in my mind.
Who hasn't lied on their resume, man? You don't put on the resume like, yo, I'm fluent in Excel. That's the NBA player's resume, is his height. He did play in some of the Raptors playoff run in that year, 2016. Really? 10 minutes against the Heat in game 5. Game 5 of that series, Raptors, that game Raptors won by 8 points. He played 10 minutes in an 8-point game. And then he played 12 minutes, a full fourth quarter in game 5 against the Cavs. That's the one the Raptors lost by 38 points. Yo, these Cavs scores are triggering, man. I don't want to see this. Minus, yo, they lost by 31, 19, 38, and 26.
Disgusting.
Oh, my God. Oh, those were real dark times. And those were actually the bright times.
Yeah, do you think you'd want to go back to LeBronto era right now?
Let's see. Okay, so there isn't a LeBron in the East, so that would really help. Because that was really the main problem. Aside from the fact that the Raptors just didn't have enough quality star talent to get consistently results in the playoffs on that level. But would I want to return to that? I mean, I guess so. I feel like my heart could kind of sustain it better this time around. Maybe not in the same embarrassment. Like, I don't think I can see LeBron like sipping a beer or like 2 minutes into the playoff series in game 1, throwing an off the glass alley-oop from Kyrie and dunking it like LeBron did. Like, I don't think I could see that. But to be consistently beaten by like one team, let's say it's like Brooklyn or whatever, like, I, you know, I can accept that. I can kind of, I mean, I saw the championship in my lifetime, and I think that's going to sustain me for like at least a decade. So
that's truly how I feel. Like, it seems like, I don't know, it was like Larry OB made it to Canada. Like, he had to get the trophy, had to get a passport. Like, what else do people really expect from their experiences being like sports fans?
Yeah, exactly. That was already
in a small market. Like, I think if, you know, we were Celtics fans or Lakers fans, we'd expect this kind of stuff all the time, and the downturn Raptors are facing now would be really stressful. But dog, they won a championship. I saw it.
That honestly, that sounds mad exhausting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I mean, it does sound kind of cool to have a consistent championship contending team in your city, but at what expense?
Yeah, I agree.
Can enjoy a second round playoff exit. Like, if that's so long as the teams are fun to watch, I'm not interested in rebuilds, because winters in Toronto are cold enough that you have to have a team that's compelling. But so long as they're watchable, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, fair enough. What else? What other questions do we have? Let's go through that 905 questions. We got to have a 905 question every week. Come on, man. Josh, what did you think of the 905 season this year?
I mean, you know, we didn't go as far as we'd hoped. Shout out to the GM for winning Executive of the Year.
Chad Sanders, aka Blake Murphy. I'm just saying Blake won that.
Blake wins, you know, annually. I don't know. I watched a couple games. Seems like Flynn got his legs under him in a way that he wasn't able to in his games in the big league. So hopefully when's he going to be back with the major league squad?
He's technically back. I mean, the bubble's over, so he's just with the club. He's just in health protocol, I guess. I guess he was cleared to practice today, so good for him.
Okay, so yeah, I'm hoping that he's able to get some. I don't really think the second half of the season is going to go so smoothly. Like, guys are going to be working their way back on a condensed schedule.
Yikes.
But maybe, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I mean, listen, you might be well equipped to answer this question then. Which Raptors 905 player would you want to get the next call up? I'm rooting for Alize Johnson and Matt Morgan. Don't know if Matt Morgan gets in, just because if you look at his total season stats on the 905, it was like 7 points. But he did come on really strong in the last few games.
Yep.
And in some of the playoff games. But I think Alize Johnson should get a look from some team. I mean, he was on the Pacers roster for the last 2 years, kind of on two ways, you know, so he was here and there with the club. But I think he's shown some, you know, he's athletic enough to play at that level. He's a little awkward skill-wise, but he kind of gets it done. I'm not sure if that translates to the next level, but I mean, you know, as a sort of, how would I describe him? He reminds me of, like, he has some Pascal in his game. You know, kind of like an awkward, lanky, slightly undersized power forward. You know, he can score in the post. He has a spin move. Can't really shoot that well, but does everything else well. Plays with a lot of energy. Like, listen, someone could take a look, and if someone is the Raptors, I wouldn't mind. Like, after Henry's 10 days done, maybe give it to...
Are you enjoying the Henry Ellenson experience?
Let's say you put Henry Ellenson and Aaron Baines and let them play one-on-one. Can we? I feel like if there was, like, justice in the world, like, the two of them should be able to play one-on-one, and whoever wins up to 21 should keep the roster spot.
And the salary?
I mean, the salary is whatever. It's already sunk into it, but...
Yikes. He's looked all right.
Yeah.
You
know what I don't like is guys were driving into him, and as a center, you have to stand there and sustain some contact, right? Yeah. Take a bump at the rim, prevent a shot from going in. And whether it was Gordon Hayward or Lauri Markkanen, these guys aren't even that... I mean, Hayward's a little bit physical, but, like, these guys aren't even necessarily, like, those guys that really can truck through you and stuff like that. And those guys were just bumping past
him. I disagree about Hayward. He's, like... He's been saying...
Okay, yeah, you're right. Hayward is pretty jacked. You're right. But, like, he's not going to, like... He's not like Westbrook jumping through your chest or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't think he can hold his position defensively. And you know, that's tough. You kind of need to hold your position as a center. But offensively, he's very skilled. Offensively, he's skilled enough to play at the NBA level. Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe Alize is more of a two-way kind of guy, you know? Like, defensively and offensively.
It'd be fun to see Alize out there. I think it'd be fun. Yeah.
I agree. Also, someone pick up Nick Stauskas because I really do think Nick could have helped some team this year. Like, honestly, if you ask me between Nick and Matt Thomas, who's a better player, I might say Nick Stauskas because he's taller. He can get the shot off.
Yeah. The Nick Stauskas, kind of, it's sort of surprising that he hasn't been able to make it back.
Yeah, it's tough. Kate. Shout out, Kate. Okay. Ask the question that is not depressing. Which NBA Top Shot moment do you wish you could own? Choose one big moment and one relatively insignificant moment.
How big?
It could be, you know, anything.
Okay. A moment that I wanted to see if it existed on Top Shot the other day is the moment that Tim Duncan and Chris Anderson knock LeBron's headband off in the, like, 9.5 minute mark of the fourth quarter of game 6. Because I think that'd be like...
Yeah. Because he won the rest of the game without it, yeah.
Yeah, and he went crazy. That'd be a fun one to have. Mm. And the team's... I don't know. Like, do I just want, like, a really nice play? That doesn't seem that interesting. Just, like, a kind of iconic ephemera moment would be cool. And then I don't know, what would be another... JV missing the putback in game 1.
Come on, bro. Why you gotta be like this?
I just can't think of...
What's wrong with you, Josh?
I'm trying to think of things that I could maybe afford. Like, what, you want me to say Montrezl Harrell calling Luka Doncic a bitch-ass white boy? Like, these are the moments that I would want to actually say. These are the ones that I have. Like, do you have more writerly answers than this?
I do. I actually have more insignificant answers than the top ones, because the top ones you can pick. Like, oh, yeah, Kawhi shot, or, like, you know, OG Anunoby last year. Like, you can go with these kind of picks, whatever. Insignificant ones. So I got a top three. Number one, Lou Williams full court alley-oop to Bruno Caboclo to make it a 50-point game against the Bucks. Bruno's the NBA debut, Bruno's first NBA basket. I need the crowd chanting Bruno in the third quarter as well, because Raptors were up 50 and the crowd just randomly started chanting Bruno. But yeah, I need that. I think that could really sell. Number two, I need Kyle Lowry game seven against the Heat. His last three, it was like a 26-point game. So it doesn't really matter. 2 minutes left, 26-point game. So it could still be affordable, even if it's a big moment. But Mike Breen says bang twice. Yeah. And if you get a double bang from Mike Breen, that is super valuable. And wait, you're not trying to get a double bang from Mike Breen?
I mean, I'm sorry, everybody who thinks that we should be more mature.
Come on, bro. First you said the JB Tiffins, and now this. And then the top moment I would have Rondae Hollis Jefferson making that free throw last year. Remember during the 30-point comeback? The free throw goes up in the air. It pumps through and he does the Tiger Woods fist pump. I'm going to take that one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I would maybe lots of good ones. OG's block at the end of the Nets game to extend the winning streak. That'd be a fun one.
Caris LeVert,
Caris LeVert, yes. Also, shout out to Caris LeVert. I'm glad that he's been able to rejoin the team.
Yep.
Other fun ones. Amber Rose sitting courtside at the Raptors game with Terrence Ross's guest. Is that on Top Shots? Where do I buy that?
That should be. Honestly, you and I should run Raptors Top Shot. I think we would identify more value to them than anyone else. So lots of good options though, man. Honestly, LeBron sipping a beer should be a $2 million Top Shot. I'm not even kidding.
Shout out Top Shop. I mean, good for you guys. You open packs? I don't understand how it works.
I don't understand either, man. Last time I opened a pack was 2003. It's probably one of those Yu-Gi-Oh packs.
Yeah.
Next question comes from Andre. Which players are on your 2020-2021 all Gerald Henderson team? Have you thought of an all-time starting five? Actually, every time people ask me about this, I want to refer them to Blake Murphy wrote a really, really good piece about this, which are basically Raptor killers, and he looked at statistically what these guys did relative to what they did against the Raptors. And it's really, really in-depth look, and Gerald Henderson, yes, indeed, is in the first team. But this is a great question, and essentially, I mean, look, we're going to just go off the cuff here. No real research, but I think two names have to be on there already. Well, three names, really. Tony Snell, Semi Ojeleye, and Peyton Pritchard. That's your backcourt.
That's depressing. Yeah. The timekeepers in Sacramento.
Wait, are we talking all time or just this season? Because all time, absolutely, bro. That was terrible, man.
That was one of the worst. I'm trying to think of a big that's really killed the Raptors that ought not have.
You know what? I'm gonna scroll through my podcast descriptions though. They're in there.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, that's a solid top three right there. That's already like 60 points a game, just based on what they've done to the Raptors this year, man. Oh my goodness. It's always a shooter too. I feel like that's why it hurts against the bigs, because I feel like shooters are always killing the Raptors. Yeah. Bigs that have hurt the Raptors. Oh, Hassan Whiteside.
This season?
Yeah. Remember that game where he was just like destroying Aaron Baines and Chris Boucher?
Yes.
And the Kings beat the Raptors that game. And look, Whiteside hasn't really played much this year, so.
Carmelo Anthony as a power forward.
Ooh, good option. I like that. I like that.
I mean, no disrespect to Carmelo, obviously, first ballot Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. But the way that he's managed to make Raptors' lives miserable this last time they played the Blazers and last year, it's impressive. Him and option. Dame down the stretch in that game in the beginning of the season, right?
That's true. But you know what? Melo has had a good year, and he's a legend. So I feel like that's overqualifying. What about Danilo Gallinari? Both games Raptors played against the Hawks, this guy's hurt us. Maybe it's recency bias because the Hawks game was so recent, and it cut me so deeply.
Gerald Henderson level?
He might just be good. That's the thing. That's the thing with Melo too. Those guys are just good.
But Melo is above his role when he is. I guess he's been kind of good He's been like everyone's Gerald Henderson this year, because you think like, oh, Melo's out here, you know, just for, you know, just playing. But then he's, wait a second, he has 13 points and it's the fourth quarter and he's pulling up for three and, you know, three to the dome. That stuff hurts.
Ugh.
Melo.
Ugh. What about let's put Jeremy Lamb at power forward. Jeremy Lamb has killed the Raptors consistently. Yeah. So let's put him there. I don't know. It's hard. The Raptors generally do guard power forwards pretty well. Let's be real. One more question before we get to our signature segment, Malachi's Missions. This one comes from Derek Andrews, who asks, where are you at with the TV product and how will letting small crowds back into the building help or hurt the viewing experience? Also, when do Matt and Jack get back into the buildings? It's truly commendable what they're doing essentially from an empty room every night. What have you made of the TV product so far?
Besides the like weird conspiracy on the Rogers broadcast being less lucky, which maybe
I feel like they have won a lot more on TSN. I don't know what it is.
Though I remember being pissed because Game 7 against the Sixers was on Sportsnet, but we all saw how that went. So I feel like the curse is broken.
True.
But I think the beginning of the season was horrible. There were some real like embarrassing moments for Rodgers when the sound completely went sideways. And they lost the shot clock at times. But I think the last month and a half has been really, really solid. I don't know. I don't know how much sense it makes to invite crowds back in. When they had some people in audience when they played the Miami Heat, and famously Fred VanVleet told a bunch of them to shut up and put their masks on. So if the crowds aren't cheering alongside the home team, it's kind of awkward. Like even watching yesterday, the Nets-Knicks game in Brooklyn, it was a Knicks crowd. I mean, it's kind of,
of course,
impossible to avoid. So watch and like, I don't know. I think that stuff will come out in the wash. If the call guys, will they be traveling with the team or will they have to be moving independently of the team if they're going to cover them?
Man.
Like, I don't know how any of that stuff will work. So I'm not sure that they'll be joining the team until next season.
Here's the thing. I feel like since they have done pretty well, and I mean everybody in Sportsnet team and the TSN team, since the broadcast team has generally done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I think they might just keep it the same. Maybe in the playoffs, they might do like a temporary travel thing. But quite honestly, like, you know, obviously travel is a nice part of the job. And I think maybe less so nowadays because so few people have that opportunity on the beat or on the broadcast. But like they've done such a good job that I don't know necessarily if they want to add the extra little bit of stress. I mean, hopefully when everyone's vaccinated, like maybe you can move more freely, but. Yeah, I don't know. In terms of the crowds and stuff, I don't think that does really impact anything. I've seen games with crowds and stuff like that. You don't notice them whatsoever. The only thing you notice is like, oh yeah, some people are masked up on your court side talking about LeBron.
Whoa, I forgot about that.
That's the only fan interaction I remember this whole entire season.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a thing. All right, let's get to our signature segment, Malachi's Missions for this week. Obviously, Malachi, your real mission is to get healthy, take care of your health, and hopefully you rebound well from this pandemic and things like this. But Josh, aside from getting healthy, what else you got for Malachi, young Malachi?
This week, I'm going to encourage Malachi to get into baseball. The Blue Jays... Okay. Are looking pretty good. Like I think that we're set up for a pretty entertaining summer of baseball from your Toronto Blue Jays. You know, the Raptors are playing not too far from Dunedin. I'm sure that they won't interact with the team, but you know, I mean, pay attention. They could, yeah. I don't know exactly what'll happen, but I'm surprisingly excited for Blue Jays season. I mean, I'll like check out the games and follow the box scores, but don't know, like, Mike Wilner's tweets have really got me pumped for the J this season. So for Malachi, I say, you know, check out, I don't know if he's follows a different baseball team, but, you know, you are a member of the Toronto sports scene. So, yeah, check out the Blue Jays. That's my recommendation for this week.
I mean, he is from Seattle, so maybe he's a Mariners fan or whatever. But listen, the Jays this year are allegedly exciting. Who did they sign? George Springer? Pretty good. Pretty good player. A little bit older, but still pretty good player. Signed Marcus Semien?
Yep.
Okay, not bad. I don't know how he's done recently, but I feel like a few years ago he was a hot prospect.
Yeah.
Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez, Vladdy Guerrero Jr., Lourdes Gurriel, Kevon Biggio. You know.
No, it's going to be good.
It's not bad. Not bad. I mean, look, their pitching staff could probably use a little bit more of an upgrade, I feel like.
Yes.
Just based on what I saw last year's two games of the playoffs, which is how much I watched of the Jays last year, but you know.
No, they're going to be good.
They're going to be good. Okay, cool. I mean, I hear they have this Nate Pearson guy who throws like 100 miles per hour. What's going on there? Like,
they're going to be good. We should have Clifton from Etobicoke call in a couple weeks and
we should
break down some baseball for us.
What about Alejandro Kirk, the catcher, I think?
Yeah.
Man, this is tough. I briefly debated starting a Jays pod, but clearly.
Did you really?
I'm not equipped.
I was
mostly just joking about it. No, I would have to find like someone who actually diehard follows the Jays. Maybe I'll call up Dan or something.
Or Zoops,
yeah. There you go. But I don't want to waste their time either. Just being like, so who does he play? Like, what position does he play for? Like, can you imagine I came on this podcast and was like, yo, I don't really know what position OG plays. Like, you know, I don't know if anyone wants to hear that. That's where it cuts against credibility if you don't know bare
basics. Caitlin McGrath hosts a pretty good podcast at The Athletic. Spin Rate for the Jays. It's good. I mean, I agree. Like, I'm trying to get more into baseball, so the recommendation comes from the heart.
There you go. Every year, I do say to myself, I'm going to get back into the Jays, and it's been a little tough, but you know, maybe this is the year. They do have Ryu. I do love him. I need big face. You know how there's big face coffee for Jimmy Butler. There's big face Asians, and me. And Ryu, I just feel like a kinship with him just based on that alone. You know, like, you just need like your face to be 65% cheeks and like, anyway, we've hit that point in the podcast. My recommendation, that's a good one from Malachi. I hope you become a Jays fan. Honestly, Jays gear looks really good too. That part of
it does
the thrill of being a Jays fan. My Malachi mission for this week is to watch Big Brother Canada season 9. It's really good. It's really good. I'm not just saying this because my partner is working on that show. But no, it's legitimately good. Very enjoyable.
So are they allowed to tell you everything's about to happen right before it happens? Or even then, the like strict NDA?
Wait, what's that?
Are you allowed to know what happened? Like, will your partner tell you what's about to happen right before it happens? Or
Definitely they will not be telling me that. I don't want to put them in that prime position in the first place, but you can also just like watch the live feeds. That's one of the things with Big Brother, right? You can watch the live feeds.
Fair enough.
So you can kind of know what happens before the show itself goes on. But no, it's really good. Season 8 was a real disaster, but you know, this season's quite good. So that's my recommendation. So that's the podcast for this week. Thanks everyone for sending in questions. Josh, any final thoughts that you want to leave with before I sprint off to practice?
What are you practicing?
Oh, Raptors are practicing in the
track. Oh, the Raptors right practice. Shout out to Arsenal.
Why? For beating
Everton in like the, or Tottenham in the like second EPL match I watched front to back all season.
That was a good one. You picked a good one to watch.
It was a pretty good game. That first goal with what's his face? That was really cool.
Eric Lamella.
Yeah, that was. Is he good? Is he like? The truther.
No, that's the funny thing. That's not good. That's Jeremy Lamb hitting the game winner against the Raptors.
Oh, awesome.
From half court. Well, that's what he did. I mean, it's a sick goal. Maybe one of the goals of the year.
Yeah, it's got to be.
But
So shout out what, Gunners or whatever. What do they call themselves?
Yeah, they call themselves the Gunners. Yeah.
Salute. All right, I'll talk to you next week. Well, I think the Colin show comes back real soon.
We're doing some tech stuff. We're like, what, 70% of the way there, I would say.
Yes.
We're close to bringing that back. So we're looking forward to hearing other voices than our own. But I appreciate everyone for continuing the show essentially by sending in questions.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah. So thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be back next week taking more questions, probably seeing what the trade deadline looks like. Can't wait.
All right. Peace.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.